So you may have noticed kind of a pattern in this retreat. Maybe it's a pattern you've seen on other retreats as well. I don't know. I honestly probably don't do enough retreats to know. But we tend to talk the evening before about what is going to become the practice the next day. Yeah. So interestingly, like, we don't really have a practice tomorrow. We have the whole kind of transitioning of the retreat. Okay. So I'm purposely using the word transitioning, which means moving from one state to another state, rather than the closing of the retreat or the ending of the retreat. We could say we're actually entering the third part of the retreat tomorrow. Yeah. And that might last days, might last weeks, might last years. Yeah. Which is assimilating, bringing along with us, transforming these practices, these teachings, these ways of being into different conditions, different circumstances. Yeah. So one of those different conditions, different circumstances is we're going to have a different timetable, even for this last day. Is it up already? Yeah. So maybe some of you have seen it. If not, you have something to look forward to after the talk, to have a look and see, you know, how tomorrow looks. The most important thing is we're going to get up at the same time and we're going to go into our meditation hall, yeah, at the same time. So you don't need to worry. As long as you do all of that, you're on schedule. But otherwise, you can have a look, see what's coming up. So that means that the kind of content of this talk is related to, you know, what have we been doing and how can we keep it going? Yeah, that's kind of what I feel could be an interesting thing to reflect on, to talk about. And yeah, hopefully that will serve us in some way. So we have meditation on retreat and we have being a meditator in the world. Now, in some ways it's just the same stuff, and in other ways it's quite different, as we'll see. Yeah. So maybe first we need to kind of back up a little bit and actually decide if we can agree upon what is meditation. Yeah, what is this word that we use in English for meditation? And you have your own words and your own languages that try and kind of point towards this activity that we're doing. In the group meetings, I've kind of mentioned maybe a few times, maybe each one of us has already heard it, but I find the word listening to be kind of one of the closest ways of describing part of what we do in meditation. But if we trace it back and have a look, you know, at the Buddha's time, what word they were using, and, you know, in the other spiritual teachings of that time that they chose to use to describe this thing that we do here, relatively still, most of us with our eyes closed, most of us paying attention to something that's in the present moment. Yeah. And then sometimes we're dropping in particular conceptions, ideas, what we call insights. So what are we doing in all of that? So they chose this word bhavana. Bhavana. And bhavana, it doesn't mean listening. It doesn't mean, you know, paying attention. It's actually rooted in the same word for things like agriculture. Yeah? To cultivate, to grow, to develop, yeah? To bring into being qualities. Yeah, states of being, experiences also, yeah, ways of relating, ways of looking at our life, yeah, cultivating qualities, okay? And so, for me, that isn't very obvious in the word meditating, you know, to meditate. In its kind of original use in English, it was used to think about, you know, I'm meditating upon, you know, change. Having a good think about it, maybe I'll write a book about it, you know. Not necessarily looking at cultivating, bringing into being a different way of being by paying attention to inconstancy, change, all of those things. So, Here's a few ideas that I have that I've found useful as kind of framing what makes a meditation a meditation. And I just want to kind of disclaim from the beginning that I have an interest in seeing meditation as being something we can do in every activity of our existence. Right? Feels quite important to me that my definition of meditation will be accessible to that. But with that disclaimer aside, I came up with this definition according to what I noticed we were offered to do on meditation retreats. So, a bit louder. So some things that we do might end up, in my eyes, not quite classifying that they are a meditation. For example, if you have a daily practice where you decide to just sit still for an hour until a bell rings, and then you get up and you get on with the rest of your life, it might not qualify, right? It might not. Because what I'm looking for in a meditation is it starts, more or less, it starts with the setting of an intention. It starts with the setting of an intention. What am I going to do with this time? And in the words of this kind of cultivation, it's a sense of like, what seeds am I going to put? You know, how am I going to prepare this soil? Yeah? What is it that I'm looking to grow in this time? Yeah? Now, I say that's kind of the first step, but really the first step is actually just checking in. Like, how are you doing? Getting familiar. Remember this word gom we used it a while ago from the Tibetan? To become familiar with the condition of the body. How's the body doing today? How's the heart doing today? You know, how's the... Is it feeling open? Is it feeling closed? Now, how's the mind? Is it agitated? Is it quite clear? You know, is it, you know, if I say, can you be with three breaths today, mind, you know, intellect? Or is there too much going on for that? Yeah. Do we need to make some adjustments? And once we've gotten to know, we're going to plant this intention in this session, what I would like to see. Yeah. And so the invitation is, what is it you want to see more of? What is it you want to help come into being through you? Yeah? What is it you want to see come into being through you? So we have that, and that's kind of like step one. Step two is, you know, we get into it. We have a go. Can I do this? Can I pay attention in that way? Mind's going to wander away, for sure it is, for sure. When I meet it in that way, can I meet it with that flavour? So let's say I'm trying to, I'd like to see in the world more kindness, yeah? Haven't met a moment of life where I thought, you know, there's just too much kindness. That's what's really screwing this whole situation up. So I'm thinking, yeah, more kindness in me, more kindness in the world. I'm going to go for that. That's what I'm going to develop. That might be what I fall back to if I'm not feeling very inspired, you know? It's just every day, yeah, okay, kindness. Kindness sounds good. So mind wanders away, kindness. Hey, no trouble, no problem. Of course you're going to wander away. You're a mind. You're creative. You have great ideas. And you're going to wander away in meditation. You're going to wander away at other times. That's not a problem. I'm going to bring the breath into that moment with kindness. Have a nice breath, have an enjoyable breath. Give that breath to the mind, to the body, to the heart. And so we have this middle part of what makes a practice. Yeah? There's only three parts that make a practice. Yeah? In my eyes. Setting an intention and then trying to carry out that intention as best we can. Yeah? And then we get to the third part of the practice. Right? Can you imagine what the third part is? You might be ahead of me. You might be wondering. I don't know, we could take some guesses. Would you, anyone have a sense already? No? Yeah.
Maybe setting up the intention for the rest of the day.
Nice. So setting up the intention for the rest of the day. It's a really good idea. Yeah. So we carry that forwards. Yep.
I might have heard it before, but is it checking how it went?
Yeah, checking how it went. So, exactly. I think that's a really helpful thing to do, and I do think setting up an intention for the rest of the day is also a really, really good idea. So my third part of the practice, which kind of brings this practice, in a sense, to its end, is two things we want to check. One, did I do it? You know, so I set an intention, and then, you know, my mind wandered away. I got really frustrated, and I decided I was going to give up and went off and did something else. Or I set the intention and, you know, I realized I hadn't checked in properly. I didn't realize how agitated I was. I hadn't actually picked a practice that really matched, you know, the state of the body, the heart and the mind. And so, okay, remember that. So, in a sense, setting the intention for the next time, learning from that experience. But if, let's say, some miracle happens and I have one of those meditations where you set the intention, you sustain it through the practice, making any adjustments you have to do, as we said earlier, you know, you step away sometimes to come back in, a bit more calm, a bit more steady, then what I want to check is what impact did that have? I want to reflect on what was the impact of doing that practice? What did it do? Yeah? So I decided to bring in more kindness as I was doing that practice. And what did it do? It made me really irritated. Oh, that's interesting. Or perhaps more likely, it actually opened out the space. And now I feel quite spacious. Because I checked in at the beginning and I'm checking in now. You know, it's like we've done an experiment. We just like, okay, here we go. And then at the end, yeah, more spacious. It might have been because I did that practice. I feel more sensitive. I feel more open. I feel more available to people. I started to notice, wow, this is a practice that makes me available. So you see, this is how you would grow something, yeah? You would plant the seeds, you would take care of it, and then you would say, yeah, this is going well. This is what it needs. Oh, it didn't quite work. This plant needs more support. This plant needs more sunshine, needs more water, yeah? Same thing in our practice. It's alive, it's dynamic. We're cultivating something. Yeah. And then that becomes, you know, the three parts of a practice, which kind of sits in, kind of cocooned within, getting familiar with our experience. And we have to get familiar with our experience. We have to get to know. Now, what I'm hoping is that you can already see is that this framework that we've just established has got nothing to do with sitting cross-legged on the floor with our eyes closed, following the breath. Yeah? Could you not turn the washing up into a meditation? You pay attention when you're washing up, not to drop the cups, you know, not to get the soap on the floor, whatever it is. Yeah? So you're being mindful already, you're being present. Now we're going to say, let's do that activity. And let's just keep using our friend kindness. It's going to be our default intention until we think of a better one. Can I wash up with kindness? What's that going to look like? And so we might decide, okay, kindness when you're washing up is, let's say, we're in a place that hasn't got a lot of water. The kindness would be to be really careful, just to use enough water that things get clean, but not so much that we end up leaving the tap running between moments, yeah, that we don't need it. Or it might mean I do it slower than I would normally. Now that's an act of kindness. Give time, give space, stay relaxed. And then at the end I can just reflect, how was it to wash up with that intention in mind? Yeah? So, simple kind of framework, something that we can start with, simple activities like washing up, like brushing your teeth, all of those things can be converted relatively easily into meditations. And so even the most busy a life, yeah, can actually have a meditation practice. Yeah, because there's things you're already doing and we're just going to convert them, convert more and more of them. Yeah. So we'll speak tomorrow about kind of sustaining and building and retaining a daily sitting practice. But also just to kind of hold that in mind, that maybe more and more of the activities that we do can become meditations. So another principle that I kind of see as like starting off our practice is to remember any moment can become a moment of mindfulness. Any moment can become a moment of mindfulness, right? Just as any moment could be a moment of distraction, right? So you could be sitting here in a meditation retreat and be really, really distracted. And there could be someone else walking down the streets, you know, the shops and bars of Helsinki, and they're really, really present. And we're here on the retreat, completely spaced out, daydreaming, and they're over there being really present, and they're not meditating, and we are. What's going on? What makes a meditation? Yeah. Are we meditating if we're not mindful? Is it a necessary ingredient? It's got to be in there, hasn't it? Yeah, you've got to be present. So you've probably noticed this kind of trend in what I speak about, what I think about. It's like, well, what are these words that we use? So again, mindfulness. I think it's an interesting word. I think it's quite a beautiful word in many ways. But it's also quite a confusing word. Yeah? What is the mind full of when we're mindful? I've got a mind full. I've got a mind full of trouble. I've got a mind full of desires. You know, I've got a mind full of hindrances. I've got a mind full of peace. Are they all moments of mindfulness? Is that what it means? You know, kind of recently or famously, Jon Kabat-Zinn, you've heard of this guy, you know, he really kind of brought mindfulness into clinical settings, you know, helping people with stress, you know, mindfulness-based stress reduction, all these kind of skillful courses. And he uses a beautiful definition of mindfulness, which I'm going to say even before I say it, I don't think it's a good definition of mindfulness, but I think it's a beautiful thing to develop, you know. It's mindfulness means paying attention in a particular way, on purpose, in the present moment, and non-judgmentally. I think that just sounds great, yeah? I think it really sounds like a good thing to do. But I don't think it's mindfulness, but I do think it's really good to pay attention in a particular way. So we've really left it kind of open there. On purpose, in the present moment, and non-judgmentally. And I think if we start doing that more and more, I think, you know, we're really contributing to a more beautiful world. But interestingly, the word that becomes mindfulness, sati, is actually much more to do with holding in mind, to remember, to recollect, yeah, to bear in mind. And so what are we being asked to bear in mind? What are we being asked to bear in mind? And it could be many, many things. Yeah, it could be insights. Bear in mind this insight. Yeah. So it's not so fixed as to say, you know, just don't be judgmental of yourself. But it's actually, mindfulness is like a vessel that we fill with something. This mind is full with something. And so I think the first step with a mindfulness practice, or any practice, and where we're kind of dropping this intention into, is we need a base of remembering something. And the first thing I think we have to remember is the possibility of other possible ways this could be. What I call the possibility of possibilities. Yeah? And what I like about this is that sometimes other possibilities don't feel possible. But the possibility of other possibilities might feel possible. Yeah? I don't feel like I can really change, but I feel like maybe it's possible that I could begin to change. And so a lot of my practice is rooted in this idea of, can I turn the dial a tiny, tiny bit? Yeah? Could I be slightly less angry? Could I be slightly less uptight? Yeah? Could I just be slightly more kind? And if I say to myself, no. I say, really? No, really? Not even like a tiny, tiny bit? Yeah? That you can't. And if I find I can, and then I notice that things have changed, even just a little bit, then I have to admit to the possibility that maybe I can turn it a little bit more. Yeah? And before you know it, you're finding the capacity to really start to play along that dial. Yeah? Because in each moment, it's going to be true that it is possible to turn it a tiny bit. And just as this vast lake out here is only made up of tiny water droplets, and if we took one out, each of us, continuously, there would be no water droplets in there. Yeah? Now, it might say it would take a really long time. But we've got a long time. And so maybe we'll stop the talk now, go and get our tweezers, and begin emptying the lake. But no, we won't. But we can get this sense. Things are flexible. They are fluid. There are always possibilities. Always possibilities. Yeah? And sometimes we turn away from things because they feel too much. Yeah? I remember recently Zara was sharing this, there's a Jewish saying that it's not up to us to complete the task. It's not up to us to complete the task. It's, oh, complete the task. Whatever the task is, it's not up to us to complete the task. But of course it doesn't end there. And it says, but it's also not for us to turn away from it. It's also not for us to turn away from it. Yeah? So if we're faced with something that feels enormous, and there are things in the world, I think, that feel pretty big, yeah? Could be the climate, it could be inequality, you know? Could be human rights, could be capitalism, yeah? I'm not an enormous fan of capitalism, it's done some good, you know? But it can't be the best way that we could live together. And these things, they feel too big to change, yeah? Never lived without it, never known a world where, you know, we don't just all drive wherever we want, whenever we want, you know? And you thought, how are you ever going to change that? And we're looking at the end point and forgetting that we can start changing things in a moment, yeah? So this afternoon we did a practice, I'm sorry I had to shout it at you, you know, around gratitude, yeah? And a few years ago, maybe it's kind of many years ago, I can't remember, I remember writing an article that I actually think gratitude is a great antidote to capitalism. Yeah? To feel that gratitude actually reveals to us there's so much I can enjoy before I buy anything at all. And there's this beautiful line from a Mexican Zen monk. I really love the sound of Mexican accents, you know. I'm not going to impersonate it because that wouldn't be fair and I wouldn't do a good job. But if you imagine this in kind of this Mexican accent, really lovely kind of sounding thing, and he says, pause before buying anything and see if breathing is enough. And, you know, when it comes down to it, there's so much you can enjoy about an in-breath. And if you forget how much there is to enjoy about an in-breath, then, you know, dive under the water and don't have one for a while. And then you'll come back up. Wow! In-breaths are the thing. So life-giving. So sensational. Yeah? What can you get in a shop that's going to compete with that? I can't think of anything. You've had maybe longer to think. Oh, I can't wait to get one of those. But really, would it be better? Would it be better? And so we're talking about this practice, this mindfulness, this presence, and then bringing in these intentional qualities. And the really good intentional qualities are the ones that are, what there's a saying in the teachings, recommended by the wise. Intentions that are recommended by the wise. The wise. And the who. And so what are those kinds of intentions? And this actually unfolds as a particular practice I like to do. And I'm happy to share it with anyone later on. So it's called being mindful of the hindrances and bringing in the paramis. Okay, so the paramis are qualities that can become our intentions, become our, you know, kind of good ones to kind of bring in into being. So do we remember the hindrances? Yeah. So there's this selfish, greedy desire, going to get this for me or my gang. Yeah. There's the aversion. I don't want any of that around here. You know, we don't welcome those here, those types. Yeah, whatever that is, that aversive, pushing away kind of behavior. Yeah. And then there's this really restless, agitated, worried. Yeah. And why do we get worried? Sometimes we're worried because, you know, there's something unfamiliar around. And sometimes we're worried because we did something that wasn't very ethical. Yeah. And that worry. Should not have done that. The regret. Yeah. This worry, regret, this restless energy that we can get ourselves into. Yeah. It's one of the hindrances. Another one we'll know is this kind of dullness, this boredom. It's not incapacity to engage with our experience. Yeah. Just haven't got enough energy for life right now. Or it's same old, been here, yeah, breath, yeah. That's just the breath. We're on that kind of surface level, not really able to get into the experience. It's also a hindrance. We'll come into contact with these daily. They do not only visit people on meditation retreats. They will visit you at home, at work, in the car, coming into and out of sleep. You know, they'll find us and they'll visit us. They're visitors though. Yeah, they're not who we are. And then there's the doubt, lack of self-belief, lack of faith in myself to turn the dial, even a little bit, yeah? And so, as we said, you know, it's really important to know, another way of saying this, it's always important to know there's never nothing I can do. I know it's a double negative, might have more than two in there, but there's never nothing I can do in these circumstances. So if you remember, the hindrances are going to come, they are going to visit, but they're visitors. Yeah? They will encourage you to identify with them. I am greedy. I am angry, aversive. Yeah? I am restless. I am, I am, I am. You remember Zohar's talk from last night? Yeah? Watching out for tricking ourselves into identifying with passing things, passing phenomena. Okay, but they'll have that nature and they'll feel sticky. They'll also deny that they are a Nietzsche. Yeah? I'm here. I've always been here. You've just been pretending I wasn't here. You've always been an angry person. And, you know, and then we can't remember a time when we weren't. Of course we were. Everything is a Nietzsche. Everything is inconstant, changing. So, step one with the hindrances is to remember they are not personal. The fact that there's a list, yeah, and that they've been passed down for thousands and thousands of years shows they're not personal. They've got nothing to do with you. They're just a pattern that we happen to find ourselves in as human beings. So it's really just worthwhile recognizing that. They're also not you, not something to identify with. They're something that's occurring. They're a way of relating to life, right? And those keep changing. The second thing to remember is we can change them. Yeah, we can change them. We can upgrade any of these qualities. Yeah? So if we're starting to feel selfish and greedy, we can actually tune into the first of these paramis lists. And the first one is dana, is generosity. Yeah? See something good, you've gone to all of that trouble to think about it, you've even worked out what websites probably stock it, you're about to order it, get it for yourself, and you just, well, hang on, maybe a breath's enough. Yeah? And that actually is another of the paramis, which is renunciation. Actually just letting go of trying to get more of things. You actually support renunciation, the letting go of that desire. But I like to also twist it into the other one, which is you've done all this research, you've done all this thinking about it, you've decided there is something nice and beautiful, and it's a bit like that last slice of cake. Do you remember we talked about that? So much nicer to give it away. So if you're going to buy it anyway, you figured you could afford it, what about giving it to someone else? Really going to double the enjoyment, maybe triple it. Extend the happiness. As long as you're sure that they want it or make good use of it, yeah, otherwise it's really a waste of your resources and the world's. But that is a way that we can transform. If we find ourselves having and getting trapped inside of greediness, we can transform it into these paramis. Yeah. And if we're having a lot of aversion, we said, you know, your type, you're not welcome here, then we know what the opposite of that is. And metta is a parami. Metta, the kindness, the welcoming. Yeah. We could also see it's possible to switch that one around into patience. And patience is also a parami. Yeah. Also a quality that can be lifted incredibly high. Yeah. Incredibly high. We can also support energy, yeah, diligence, showing up. And when that low energy is there, it can be really important to bring that kind of a quality in. It's like, do I know how to lift my energy? Do I know how to get interested, how to pay attention? Yeah. So I don't know if we've used this example, but do you know about the Mariana Trench? Everyone heard about what a Mariana Trench is? So it's the deepest point on the planet, yeah? It's under the water. It's this deep, deep, deep place. I think they say there's fewer, it used to be at least, fewer people have been down to the bottom of the Mariana Trench than have been to the surface of the moon. Yeah, it's really deep down. It takes a long time to get down there. You have to get some kind of special submarine. Sadly, they've been down there and found a carrier bag from a supermarket, but it's still a very, very deep down place that a lot of people haven't investigated. Same is actually true of boredom. Boredom is the Mariana Trench of the human life experience, right? Because we're so buoyant, we just stay up on the surface. You try and swim down to the Mariana Trench, you need a special vessel to get there. The special vessel to get into boredom is interest. Interest. If you bring interest into boredom, it cannot survive. It needs to wear its cloak of I am not interesting. And you say, oh, what's this really uninteresting thing here? Oh yeah, that's me, I'm uninteresting. You wouldn't find me interesting. And we say, oh okay, fine, yeah, you do look really uninteresting, and we ignore. Yeah? And I'm gonna get away from this guy, you know. No, not hanging around with that. But actually, if you say, I don't believe you, that is what interesting people are always saying. What do you feel like? I want to know, how do you feel? Where actually are you, even? Boredom, I can't find you anywhere, and I'm looking for you, I'm trying to get engaged with you. Yeah? And then what do I find? Boredom was just hiding enormous peacefulness inside. Secret of existence. Some people are seeking a refuge where there's not so much trouble and strife, wanting some reliable peacefulness in their life, and keep walking past boredom and say, oh, there's nothing there. Of course there's nothing there. There's nothing in peacefulness, is there? It's peaceful. It's just peacefulness. Calm. Profound calm. Yeah, but you bring in that quality, that investigation, that engagement with the experience, and you start to get into different experiences. Yeah. And then once we've tasted this peacefulness, then perhaps when we find ourselves in restlessness, we start to know what to do. And what does restlessness need? So we talked about one of the causes for restlessness is actually remorse, regret. So one of the ways not to end up in there is to lead a more ethical, noble life. And we'll touch on that in a moment, yeah? That the so-called five precepts, these investigations of our experience, our ethical behavior, are an integral part of what it means to be a meditator. And they're not just for retreats, yeah? Some aspects of that need to come into the whole of our life. Remorse. Feeling bad about what we've done and kind of feeling sad about it. Wishing we had not done that. But with that, you know, comes along other kind of behaviours, you know. Also, the patience in regards to restlessness is also really, really helpful. Yeah. When is this restlessness going to end is what restlessness says to restlessness. Yeah. And that, you know, turning it. It's turning. Hey, turn it some more. And it's just attached to this thing. It just goes round, comes back round to you. So, hey, get out of here. It just keeps coming back faster. Yeah. And actually say, why don't you just hang around, restlessness? You've come all the way. Have a seat. Tell me about how it is to blow like the wind, yeah? You crazy fox. Have more space, like Zar was saying. Like, give it some more space. Let it be here. And the final one that we can refer to at this time, yeah, this doubt that comes up for us at times, can really affect us. When we're alone and practicing, this isn't going to make any difference. Why do I even bother? This isn't changing my life. You know, I'm just doing these things, going through the motions, pretending to meditate. I set an intention, I can't keep it up. I look at the end, nothing changed. We really lose faith in ourselves, lose faith that it's even worth doing. You know, the people around me are living crazy consumerist lives and I'm trying to see if a breath is enough and it never is. You know, why do I even bother? You know, and then it comes back to this thing, is like, are you sure it's not making any difference at all? Are you sure? That possibility of possibilities to move the dial a tiny amount, yeah? Can we do that? Can we do that? You look around at the world and it's full of flowers at the moment, yeah? It's like beautiful flowers. How did that happen? How did that happen, yeah? And we want to make a really big difference in the world. If you want to make a really big difference, be like the butterflies and the bees and the small pollinating flies, you know. They're carrying little bits of pollen from plant to plant. They carry worthless amounts of pollen from one place to the other. And the whole planet, under the right condition, is in bloom. Are we over-exaggerating how much difference our existence has to make or has to be seen to be making moment to moment? Yeah, you need to make something of your life, don't you? And yet maybe you are, in unseen ways, in untold ways. Maybe we are becoming, you know, the radical kinds of change that we want to see in the world. But it takes determination, takes showing up time and again. Another metaphor I like to use for a meditation is like baking bread. Yeah? And I'm not very good at baking bread, but one thing I know is you can't keep opening the oven and checking if it's done. Yeah. After 5 minutes or so, no, it's still not done. I don't understand this. So why is it not cooked? Close the oven door. Why? It's still not done. It's like, leave it alone, let it rise. Let it bake, let it cook, yeah? Can we be willing not to keep checking if this thing is working. Yeah. So sometimes that patience is part of that dedication. It can be very, very important things to do. Yeah. So we want to stay on the right track with our practice. And one of those ways to kind of draw us in, to draw us forwards, are these precepts. Yeah. Do need to investigate our life, not just on retreat, but outside. In what ways am I causing harm to others that are unnecessary? Not good for me, not good for others. Are there ways that I lead my life? Yeah, maybe that I'm following my desires more than I am my sensitivities. There really is a lot more joy in renunciation of the harms that we cause as modern humans, yeah, than there will be in the collection of more things. Yeah. In what ways am I not skillful? Yeah. With my desires? Am I not skillful with the way I project onto other living beings that they should, you know, satisfy my desires? Another really important part of our life is going to be, how is my speech? Now, you may have gotten to know for yourself how your speech is internally. How much time do we spend praising ourselves? And how much time do we spend criticizing ourselves? Sometimes in really harsh ways. Yeah? You could say that sometimes the intellect, the habit of the way that we talk to ourselves, is really not a team player. It's not encouraging. It's not like, yeah, that was good. That was good. You were with the breath. I saw you do it. You were really in it. Yeah, it was sweet, you know? I reckon we can do another one. You could do another one. Let's do another one. Here we go. Instead, it's like, you fool, where have you been? This is hope. You are hopeless. So we have to be able to turn back to that and say, okay, look, I know you're trying to inspire me, but what I really need now is a little bit of backing, a good tone, a nice comment, and we can move on. And practicing that with ourselves is also really helpful for the later, practicing that with others. Yeah? So with the speech, good listening, also good expression. Look for opportunities to make a kind word. Yeah? Look for opportunities to make a kind word. You can really change someone's life. Yeah? And the beautiful thing is, that's like the gym that we're working out for this being inside us who is always wanting to have a little chat with us about how good or not good we are. The more that we start to develop these pathways, yeah, then they become the more obvious pathways to take. So a great practice for this is something like metta meditation. Yeah, we're just trying out some phrases. Now, some of you may have even noticed this on the retreat, yeah? And there's this kind of famous story, but I'll tell this kind of well-known story of a person who really supported this practice coming into being. They decided to do metta practice, and they'd always been really critical of themselves. And then suddenly, you know, something happened, they had to leave their retreat, and they were, you know, packing their bag, and they dropped something, and it smashed on the floor. And the person's name is Sharon Salzberg. And they said to themselves, oh, Sharon, you are such an idiot. But I love you. And they'd never finished that sentence that way before. Yeah? You're so clumsy, but I love you. And you start to see, just do this practice for some period of time, and we'd start to remap the route through the brain, yeah? Becomes stronger, it becomes a stronger pattern. It's what we've walked the most. And it works is also in nature. You know, when people take a pathway, we start walking up that pathway as well. Yeah, you go through a woodland, you go through some grass, and it's like, oh, I'll just go the way other people went. I wonder if thoughts are like the same way. And we just take this, oh, I'm going along this path, may you be well, may you be well, may you be well, may you be well. Oh, there's a stranger, may you be well. You say, oh, hang on, I didn't know that one. It's okay, it's fine. Yeah, may you be well. May you have a great life, fellow living being. Yeah? Something opens in the realm of possibilities. We can open that in our life, in our existence. And so we can utilize all these aspects of the teachings. And the last thing I just want to share with you is there are so many ways we can do these practices. And actually, someone who became kind of a friend, also a great teacher and has a lot to inspiring ways and creativity, called Gregory Kramer. And he developed this whole practice called Insight Dialogue, which you should really check out in terms of like wise speech. It's got so many kind of gifts to offer. But what I want to share with you is one of the things that he said. He said, all of these teachings, every teaching you will ever hear anywhere, is a practice. It's a practice waiting to happen. So if something strikes you, like an insight, it's like, oh, that's amazing. That's not to be taken, like decanted into a glass jar, you screw it up and you put it up on your spice rack that you never use and say, I have this insight here. Instead, this is to be applied. What would it be like in this moment, something that felt true on this retreat, and we just say, must be true now as well. We just sprinkle it in. This moment must be a Nietzsche. There is the possibility to open to more. Wherever the insight is for us, let's keep them alive. Let's bring them with us. Yeah. The world needs us to awaken, and it needs us to awaken with it. Yeah. In it, in our lives, in our relationships, all of it. And it's possible. It's possible. Yeah. Our life can become a living meditation, a cultivation of beautiful qualities. Yeah. Let's just take a moment together and cultivate something nice. And just have a little victory lap, whatever you've cultivated, letting it touch you, letting it have all the space it needs.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.